Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome, listeners, to the Extra Inch. My name's Bardi. Yes, that's right. I'm the Capitano now. Windy is away. Nathan was without internet as he moves home, so they've left me holding the baby to discuss the Brighton game. But thankfully, I'm joined by a proper football man, someone who puts the cones out and coaches players in real life. My best friend for today, Chris Summersell. Hello, Chris.
Hi, buddy. It's so good to be on here at last. Finally, I've jumped off the bench and got in the first team.
Well, let's see if you can have a good impact off the bench. Chris, you've been on a few pods and you regularly pod with Windy on Straight Off the Training Ground, which is one of the great podcasts that we have behind our paywall. But for those who should know more about you but don't, can you introduce yourself, please?
Yeah, well, I guess first and foremost, I'm a big Spurs fan. I've been going to watch us play since the 90s. So there's my like proper football man bit. But I also, on the side, I coach and I work as an analyst as well. So, you know, sort of dip my fingers in you know, lots of different football pies. And yeah, but the main thing is I'm fully coys, I guess.
Nice. So you have the laptop, but you also get out and get muddy. That's great.
Exactly.
Before we get into Brighton, all of you would have heard us talk about our partners, Humans of Purpose. They're a fab weekly podcast featuring interviews with purpose-driven leaders who work as having a positive social impact and making the world a better place. Mike Davis's guests come from leading charities, social enterprises, purpose-driven businesses, but also include authors, politicians, and philanthropists. This week, we want to highlight an episode with Julia Kay. Julia Kay is co-CEO and co-founder of Great Wrap. Great Wrap produce the only Australian-made compostable cling film wrap. Well, actually, it's a bit bigger than cling film. It's cling wrap to wrap around pallets and everything else like that. But even better than that, it's made out of waste potato scraps, which immediately appealed to me, to be fair, because I live by the fact that pretty much anything in life can be summed up by a potato or using the potato as an analogy. But go and give it a listen. It's utterly fascinating. And obviously, this invention has world-changing capabilities. Give it a listen and scroll through their back catalogue for loads more interesting content. You can find out more by following Mike on Twitter at MikeDave84 or check him out on Instagram at Humans of Purpose. So while potatoes are on our minds, Chris, what potato dish was Spurs on Saturday?
You know when you go to like a service station, like yeah. It's 2 a.m, you just need something to eat and you think, oh, they do a baked potato. And you think, oh, how wrong can you get like a baked potato and beans? And it's like, it just comes out, it's dry. They've put like tiny bit of butter on it, barely any butter at all. And it's just really disappointing. Something that could be so good, that often is so good, because a baked potato done well is a glorious thing. But on Sunday, it was dry. It was awful. Yeah,
I think that's probably right, because it was one of those where full honesty, I was in Portugal over the last week, so I missed the game. I wasn't at the stadium. But in the build-up to it, and also I even missed the match because I was traveling across Portugal driving. But in the car, before I left to drive, it was one of those where the weather seemed great. The atmosphere was positive. We were playing before Arsenal. It was a sunny Easter bank holiday. And you're right, it did look like a great baked potato that had come out of the oven and was ready to go. Loads of cheese, loads of beans. But yeah, they ended up being a 2 a.m. one that was then dropped on the floor on your brand new trainers.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was awful. I mean, I wanted to go to the game, but because something happened which meant I couldn't go. Mm. At the last minute, and I was gutted. I sat here watching it, you know, in the TV, just really, really frustrated I wasn't there in the sun, because we were going to batter Brighton again. Arsenal were going to lose in the evening. Obviously, they did, which was good. But yeah, it was a thorough disappointment, and I'm sort of glad I didn't travel all the way down.
So before I get an angry message from Windy, because we've spent too much time talking about potatoes, we'll start where we normally start, the lineup. So Chris, tell me, what were your feelings when you saw the lineup?
I mean, it was just the, I guess, the usual with obviously Royale in a right wing back. I don't think we expected any particular deviations from usual. There was a case for using maybe Sessegnon on the right himself, or even something a bit left field like Lucas or Bergwijn at right wing back. But no, it was fairly standard. And I think that played into Brighton's hands, because we've played them twice recently already and they sort of knew exactly what was going to come. We've beaten them quite comfortably twice. And I think Potter knew exactly what was coming and reacted accordingly. And we really struggled. So yeah, there's no real surprises in the lineup. And I don't think we're going to have too many surprises for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I think this leads on to a question here from Frazzle. He says, with Potter Ball wiping out all the progress of the previous four matches by choking out any passes into Harry to release Son or to allow the ball to get into Kulu and Son facing the play, how worried should we be about facing similar tactics from five of the teams we face in the six final games?
Yeah, I mean, just looking at the stats just now in terms of how many passes the front three received. And they're all like well down on their like average for the season, particularly like Kulusevski and Son. Like, you know, Kane was actually, which surprised me, it was around about, you know, just a little bit below his usual. But they did really, like, they screened the passing, the passes into them really well. They were very good at pressing our central midfielders to like to prevent them going forward, which then meant that the ball was forced to our wing backs, who were the best win in the world and not the best pass of the ball going forward. So they really did a number on us. I'm not too worried going forward, because there's some teams who are going to play differently. And I think if you're going to do what Brighton did to us, you have to do it really well. And I think, I guess we've got to do a bit of Graham Potter loving on the pod. I think how he set them up was absolutely perfect. And, I think as we go forward in the future, like next season, when teams start to pick up our patterns and learn how to react to them, it'll be a problem in the longer term. But I can see potentially some of the games going, like the Villa game is where a bit of early pressure they put us under, but eventually they tire and the gaps will appear. But with Brighton, the gaps didn't appear because they were so, so well drilled to not allow us to do that. So I'm not too concerned for the rest of the season. And I hope I'm right.
Yeah, you shared with me before we recorded the kind of the in-ball focus of the game. And I don't normally watch these because Proper Football Man doesn't. But I did watch it, and you could see how Brighton, the shape Brighton took up was really interesting. And it did kind of cut up everything, and it almost forced the ball to our weakest players. Do you reckon if Doherty had been fit, we might have been able to break it down? Because Emerson's got great physicality and he's nice and fast, but he does lack the kind of bit of guile and a bit of on the ball panache. God, I can't believe I'm using the word panache to describe Doherty. that's how important he has become. Do you think had Doherty played, we might have been able to break through their very organised structure?
I really don't think so. I mean, Doherty's best asset is his running in behind, his sort of timing. Mm-hmm. And Emerson did make quite a few runs in behind. I don't think we're the same timing or the same sort of dynamism, maybe. And again, I can't believe I'm using the word dynamism with Doherty. But we either just missed him, didn't find him, or ignored him, because the kid, if he does receive the ball, nothing's going to happen at the end of it.
Yeah.
You know, whatever those three. So I don't think it made a lot of difference. I think him picking up the ball in the middle third with looking to pass forward, I don't think he would have added anything that Royale didn't. And, you know, I guess the other side, Reguilón did absolutely nothing, was shut down completely. And we didn't get him, you know, running onto the ball as we do often, like, you know, at least once a game. So, yeah, they really did screen out those passing lanes in really well. Like Bissouma just spent the entire game between the ball and Kane. And that seems like something that is quite easy to do. And you think, well, why doesn't every team do it? But it's because you've got to do it consistently for 90 minutes. And that's why they did it so well. And I do think playing them twice recently has allowed them to understand us better and work on a game plan. So, and that's the thing with Conte, right? Conte has, you know, he's famous for getting his patterns in really quickly. His teams, like, you know, learn them quickly. They're really good. And then the other teams, once they've played them a few times, they learn it and they realise how to react against it. And then the team sort of falls down a bit. And obviously we've had two quick games against Brighton. So I think that sort of process has been accelerated within a month. So it sort of shows what we've got to look forward to when teams catch up with us. But yeah, I don't think it was all the wing-backs' fault. I think they just did a really, really good job. And it looked like the wing-backs' fault because they were the sort of the free players to receive, you know, at times. And it was just, they didn't have the nous to get through. And we know that about the wing-backs. So, yeah, it was just a bit of a shame.
I do think when we've beaten Brighton recently, those two games, we have kind of opened the scoring with a lucky goal. There was the Emerson deflected cross. And then, of course, there was the Romero deflected shot, which I think that helped us in those two matches. I mean, Brighton, if they had been on a bad run until they decided to crush North London in two games in a row. But they remain a good team. And we know that Potter is a decent tactician. I'm not a huge Potter fan, but I do think he has proven himself once again to be a smart manager. There's a question here, which is from an anonymous source. Is our inability to pass through organised teams totally down to Højbjerg not being good enough in possession? I'm not sure who wrote that, but it could have been me.
So, anticipating this question was going
to
come up.
Because we need to let people know that you are very pro Højbjerg, and as many people know, I'm not so pro Højbjerg.
I am very pro Højbjerg. I'm not saying I think he is the answer to all our progressive midfield issues, but in the game, just looking at it, the stats, Højbjerg played 11 forward passes, 7 successful. Bentancur, 5 forward passes, 2 successful. And even like final third passes, Højbjerg made more final third passes. So in that game, I think if you're looking at the central midfielder who was the problem, I think Bentancur was the issue in terms of getting the ball in central midfield and moving forward. And again, I think a lot of that was down to how Brighton stopped us. They were fairly aggressive in getting out to both Højbjerg and Bentancur to stop them turning, to stop them playing forward. But yeah, I was pretty disappointed with Bentancur in that game. And it just got me thinking about how someone like, and I dread to say it, but someone like how Ndombele receiving the ball, or even Lo Celso in those areas, who can turn a game by doing something individual, that would have given us so much more. And I think we're going to have to get used to, if the patterns don't work, we don't have the central midfielders who have the individual solutions to really get us into the final third quickly. That was maybe like a bit of a tell for other teams of how to shut us down.
Yeah, I mean, I do always say that Højbjerg is a bit of a stat padder, and I do think the stats he generates are misleading. I mean, even he did one forward pass, which ended up, they countered free kick, and then they ended up scoring from it. But you can't, obviously, there was way too many kind of phases from that to directly link it to him. But I do believe that he needs improving, especially when he's in a two and we're playing against such an organised team. And I think this is the problem that I have with Højbjerg. I think he needs to be better. He's fine, and he gets, for the majority of games, he will do okay. And I think probably the same applies to Bentancur, but I think there will be opponents where we need a little bit more from them. And I just don't think he has that in him. And what you mentioned about Lo Celso and Ndombele, I think those two guys do have that quality. But it's almost like they have that quality, but then they don't have the qualities to make Højbjerg so effective as well. I mean, we've seen on occasion us play three in midfield. Would that have been something that you would have done in this game to kind of help us progress the ball better?
I mean, certainly as a sort of a switch at halftime or even during the game, because it was clearly wasn't working how they were pressing us, how they were screening those passes. But just by changing sort of the shape, the angles, if everything would have, I think, perhaps opened it up. But Conte's so wedded to his patterns, I don't think like a plan B doesn't exist to him. It's like, just do the patterns better, one will come off. And as we saw against Villa, that happened. I think maybe switching to a three would have helped us, maybe getting Winks in there. But I think that might be like a development for next season. When Conte gets a pre-season, we have two or three different sort of systems that we can flip to if something's not working, so the players know it. But I don't think Conte's the kind of person who's just going to go half time, right, we're going to change shape and sort of not hope for the best, but hope we can alter what the opposition are doing. And I think he's just very trusting in what he can do. And that, this is a game where that really got found out, because we just couldn't get anything going at all. But I don't know, maybe change to a 3-5-2, or potentially, I know it's been talked about quite a lot, and Conte doesn't seem in any way like moved to do this, but put someone like Lucas Rue and Bergwijn at right wing back to try and get them running in behind, or even just doing something more individual to carry the ball into their half. I would have changed it to a 3-5-2, add another body in the midfield, add Winks in there, try and get the ball forward, because we saw Kulusevski had one of his worst games, which couldn't get the ball to him, and he couldn't get the ball, he couldn't sort of do that, because Cucurella stuck really tight to me, followed him everywhere. And he was lucky not to get sent off, I think, with the flying elbow as well. So it's something I probably would have considered, but I can understand why Conte didn't want it.
I mean, Cucurella is a player that has continually, I think, catches the eye. Obviously, he's very easy to spot, but in the performances that we've seen when he's played against us, I thought he's been very good. And I think he's a player that that we should perhaps look at. Today there was talks about Conte thinking about six players coming in. Was there anyone in Brighton, in the Brighton team, that you thought Spurs could do with next season?
In terms of like his footballing ability, Bissouma would be perfect, but I know there's some sort of black marks against his name, let's say. Cucurella looks decent. I don't know too much about him. But obviously we are looking for that sort of left-sided centre-back player to maybe upgrade on Ben Davies, even though I think Davies has been fantastic recently. I think they're very smart in their recruitment, but they're very good at buying, I'd say, 7 out of 10 players who can play in the Premier League. But is there any real star player there who could, hopefully going into a Champions League team? And I think looking at them, and I may be completely wrong, but I think Bissouma would be that player. Lamptey as well, just remembered him, very, very good. He would be massively targeted in the air. But I think in terms of his profile of getting forward, getting into the box and delivering, fantastic player as well. I think those two, are probably the players you're looking at. But I don't think Bissouma would be someone I'd be comfortable with us signing.
Yeah, what's your? I'm interested to get your read on Reguilón, because when he arrived at the club, everybody was very, very happy with him, and his initial performances have been great. But over the last few weeks on social media and in the ground as well, there's been some complaints about him. Where are you right now with him?
I can see why he's getting a little bit of, I guess, criticism at the moment. I think he's been terrible, but I think I'd have expected a bit more from him, particularly when Conte came in and what he gets out of his wing backs, because he's very, very fast. And before he joined us, his stats for getting in the box were ridiculous. You think this is exactly the kind of profile that Conte would want, somebody who can get in the box. But he's not really doing that at the moment. And I think he's a sort of a player about a handbrake. He just goes and goes and goes. Everything's 100 miles per hour. He does daft things and just like that execution sometimes. But even recently, him getting forward, whether with the ball carrying or just making runs for like Kane and Kulusevski to find, it's not really been there. And it's been a bit disappointing. So I do get that, but I'm not overly concerned. I think he's I think there's something to work with, and maybe it will be a pre-season with Conte or iron all out those difficulties.
Yeah, I mean, last night was the Coppa Italia semi-final, and Damian, who was a much maligned fullback, was creating goals and playing pretty well. So I think Reguilón has a much higher ceiling. So I'm not ready to write off Reguilón yet. I think I'd give him a pre-season. But for the rest of the season, would you want to see Sessegnon come in, or would you continue with Reguilón?
I think on the face of it, both of those are good options to have. And I think Conte could make something out of, well, at least one of them. Sessegnon, you know, at Fulham, his sort of shot map was, you know, as a left wing back was like ridiculous. It was almost looking at a striker's one. And then you look at that and think, well, if Conte can get him in those positions consistently, you know, that's really good for what he wants from his wing backs. It's crazy how Conte can turn like Victor Moses, Damian, all the you know, Ashley Young, relatively, you know, average players into really functional wing backs. And then you get someone like Reguilón and you think his ceiling's enormous, and he's been so recently. So I think I did tweet it a few months ago. I think in terms of his like movement, attacking the back post and getting the box, Sessegnon is possibly like the best wing back option we have that fulfills Conte's ideas. So I think, you know, if you push me, I'd have like Reguilón as my one at the top, you know, my top left wing back at the moment. But Sessegnon, if he can get a run of games and not get injured, I think he could potentially move ahead of him.
Okay. I just want to go back and talk about a couple of things. You spoke about Lucas and Bergwijn. So both, all of us, Nathan, Windy and myself, we're all kind of against Bergwijn or Lucas at wingback. But you seem to be a little bit pro that idea. Why? What gives you? Why do you think that could work or it could be an option?
I wouldn't say I'm for it as a starting option in the team. I think it's certainly something we could look at in games where we're struggling to break a team down, and the ball's getting sort of funneled out to into those wide areas where we're looking for someone who can, you know, who can carry the ball, who can dribble past players, who can, we know that Lucas can do that certainly. So I think it's more of a only in a few weeks, and we're going to be facing a 10-man wall. And the ball is going to get out to our wing backs with no space, you know, in behind, no space in front of them to sort of carry the ball. So it's going to be players who can dribble and go past players. I think so. I would suggest Lucas may be an option in those situations, but very much as a plan B. I wouldn't like to see him start a game there. I think it's something you flip to when the other things aren't working.
Yeah, I think so. But I do have the funny feeling that we might flip to that quite often if our problems continue with Emerson. There's a question here from David Fleming. He says, what are the reasons do you think Lo Celso and Ndombele don't fit into a Conte system technically? And do you think that could be different next season?
I don't think it's technically they can't fit in. I think it's like tactically they can't fit in. They're so like off the cuff, and he wants players who are going to just perform his patterns. And whether it's, you know, outwardly, I'm not going to follow your script, or they just can't follow your script because they're so just intuitive. I think that's why they don't fit in. And I think that Conte probably expected another central midfielder to come in the last window leave, because he's even moaned about himself. We're pretty light in central midfield. But God, there's been a few times where you're thinking Ndombele turns this game just by beating a player 1v1, and it opens up the pitch. And I know Bentancur's got a little bit of that, but certainly not in the same range as Ndombele. But I guess you can't have someone like Ndombele just sat around for the few times that we can't get the patterns working. So yeah, I don't think they technically don't fit in. I think it's they're just not a tactical fit for Conte. But we've seen, well, particularly Lo Celso is doing brilliant for Villarreal in the Champions League semi-finalist with all the other Spurs deadwood.
Yeah, I do think Lo Celso has been the one. I was the Tottenham version of Lo Celso I wasn't a big fan of, but I do think he has been the kind of winner of this. And maybe there might be something, but I also get the funny feeling that we'll use this kind of Champions League run of his to put another £10 million or so on his price. Yeah, there's a question here. So this on Harry Kane from Rob Clinty. Do you think Spurs have a better chance of winning something by keeping Kane in the attacking midfield role rather than striker? Or should we be looking to turn him back to a striker?
I think Conte's already said that he wants a number 10, hasn't he, recently? Mm-hmm. And words to the effect of he wants Kane nearer the goal. And that's where I want Kane, because I've always seen, you know, he's a goal scorer first. Obviously, he's a phenomenal passer. And we've seen that, you know, even before the last couple of seasons. We know he's a good passer, but I think, yeah, I'd like to see him close to the goal. You can't take away what he's doing at the moment as a creator. But I think I'd like to see it. I mean, I'd like to see us play so close to the goal that he's just a centre forward as he was in the past. But, you know, in our sort of the way we play at the moment, he's dropping very deep when we in organised possession, and it's just whether he can play those passes and then get in the box as well. But I guess I'm someone who just I want to see him break all the goal scoring records. I want to see him in that 6-yard box, getting on the end of everything, and then in those sort of sporadic moments where he can drop in and spray the ball around. Then I'm also happy for that. But I think I'm edging towards him being a, you know, the Conte sort of getting him back closer to the goal, which he said himself.
Yeah, I think so. I think when you look at Conte's teams, because they are, so as we keep mentioning, wedded to patterns, I do think it's the most recent Inter team that we should be comparing it to. And I think Lukaku benefited from having a midfield trio who were able to pass the ball into him in better areas. Eriksen, Barella, Brozovic, those kind of guys. And I do think once we sort out our midfield issues, Kane will start to become a number nine. I also do think that Conte's patterns, although they're very kind of set in their ways, when we upgrade the personnel and improve there, I do think there'll be kind of a little bit more variation and the ability to perhaps pull off the pattern under tight pressure. I think if we upgrade Højbjerg, if we upgrade Bentancur, I think some of these patterns will just naturally work because they're good patterns, and with better players, they'll be able to do it. Am I correct in that, in thinking that?
I think so. I mean, with Kane, like you referenced Inter last season, you obviously just like Lukaku, backing in, you know, rolling centre-backs, receiving high up, combining with, you know, players who are close to him, like Lautaro, and with the layoffs and spinning and getting behind. And I think Kane can do a similar sort of role to that. I mean, there's probably no one better to even keep the ball back to goal than Kane around. So I think that's definitely something we can use. And, we've got to remember that Conte hasn't had a pre-season. It's very rare for him not to have that. So he's sort of just embedding the first, you know, almost like the shell of his sort of patterns, which we've taken to really well. Give him a pre-season where, as we said earlier, he might be able to, you know, flip the different systems and still sort of remember how to play them. And then, yeah, with that central midfielder, someone, you know, it's not going to be Ndombele, is it? But sort of player who can receive the ball in the tight area and spin a marker and then face forward, you know, through like dribbling and ball carrying, and also punch the ball forward into the forward areas. So we don't always just have to drop Kane or it just being left to our centre-back stepping in and passing it forward. I think, you know, the higher sort of technical base that we get throughout, you know, in central midfield, it allows more patterns and more ideas, you know, to come from it. So I think we're sort of making pretty good use of what we've got at the moment. And I think in the summer, it's about fleshing out those things. And I think, yeah, with that number 10, whether it's Eriksen coming back, whether Kulusevski maybe drops into the 10, with Son and Kane up front, you know, there are options. And I think you know, I think we can expect to see Kane closer to goal next season. And I think he's just, his sort of drop in into midfield is Conte's way of sort of getting through the season, using our best player, using our two star players, Kane and Son, to, you know, with a fairly simple idea. Kane drops, receives, smashes over the top for Son, and everyone's happy. So I think, yeah, we can be pretty excited that in pre-season, when he's worked on other areas, wing backs as well, then we should have a variety of tools to hit next season well and win the title.
So talk to me about Son, because I saw this on our Discord, and somebody who doesn't watch Tottenham commented that they feel that Son is overrated. And obviously we know this isn't the case. Son is a brilliant, brilliant striker. But when you watch a game like Brighton and what he can do on the ball is they stop that. All we end up doing is seeing his weaknesses. So what do you feel about Son as playing off Kane, or Son with his back to goal? Is Son as good as we think he is? That's what I'm asking you.
Yeah, I think he is. If you have a team that uses him to his potential, which is just running in behind or receiving to run at fullbacks where he can go on the inside to shoot or outside to get in the box. But if you don't give him that, if you just play him back to goal or just pass him back to goal and you stop him getting in behind, then he's going to look useless. And I think him in this position at the moment, the positives are as that inside forward, that the positives are he's sort of closer to goal when he runs in behind. So if you find him, he's there. And we've seen that time and time again. If you stop that, he's then just receiving back to goal and he gets robbed of the ball and he looks useless. So if you had absolutely no idea what Son was like and you watched that game at the weekend, you're thinking, what's this joker doing? Like, he receives back to goal and he loses it every time. But it's, you know, what he does in behind. And like, even if you think back a few years ago when he used to receive it wider and run at the fullback, again, you know, he was very good at that. I wouldn't say he's like the best dribbler in the world, but he's so fast and he can go either way and is both footed. That's what makes him so dangerous. But so overrated. It's the kind of thing, if he went to someone like Man United and didn't use him right, Man United fans would be there going, oh, this guy's useless. He can't do it at Man United. He can do it at somewhere like Tottenham, whatever, but he can't do it at Man United. So, well, you've got to use him right. And there's quite a few players like that. But, you know, we saw it with Dele before. If you don't use him to his strengths, there's no point in being there, because he'll make the runs in behind and no one will find him. So, yeah, he's not overrated. He's just pretty specific in what he can do. And if you get the best out of him, he's a world-class footballer. He's our 10th top goal scorer of all time.
Yeah.
This guy's brilliant.
But then is that a problem when you have a player who's... So we know he's brilliant, and I'm not saying he's not, but if he's limited and he can be stopped so easily, is that a problem for Tottenham going forward? Is that something... Like, should we be looking to upgrade Son in the sense that we need a player who can do what he can do behind, but also a bit more coming to the ball? So, like, would that be something you'd look to upgrade or change? Not upgrade, because it's very difficult to upgrade, but change.
I don't think you could. If you had someone who could do what Son does in behind defences and then in front of defences, then you've got like the best player of all time.
True. Okay, so maybe let's say Son is a 9 out of 10 going in behind. You get someone who's a 7, but then Son, we know, we've both spoken about, is pretty weak with his back to goal. You get someone who's a 7 with their back to goal. So do you have a player who's weaker but who elevates the rest of the team?
But you've sort of described Bergwijn there. He's very good back to goal. You can combine. You can go in behind a little bit. We saw that against Leicester. He's certainly not, I don't think, that has any sort of the game-changing qualities that Son does, or like or decisive qualities that he has. But again, but that's a bold move if you said, this isn't working today, Sonny, you know, we're going to put Bergwijn in. Because you know all you need to do is get him in behind once and it's all over. And it's a threat of what he can offer as well, because even whilst he was completely thwarted against Brighton, don't think for one second that Brighton weren't concerned that all Bissouma had to do is switch off once. Kane receives, and then Sonny's in behind, and it's undone all your good work. So it's the threat of the pace in behind that is also something that's massive as well. And that, I think, that subtly pushes the defences back as well. And you know, it's just, yeah, it's the threat of it which is something you can't really quantify as well. So yeah, I love Sonny. I think most people do. He's just, when he's on a bad day or when the team's on a bad day and he keeps receiving the ball, I mean, he looks like he's playing with a pair of Doc Martens on sometimes. Honestly, it's like it can look terrible, but then it's just that's that one run in behind and everything's forgiven. And he is a ridiculous finisher. Like, I don't think you can underestimate his finishing quality as well. I don't think we can upgrade on Sonny, but we certainly could look at players like Bergvine who offer something different in that same area if it's not working.
Okay, well done for not going up on a hill and taking the bait there to give us a nice sound.
I'm not dying on a hill in my first main pod. That's the only thing I'm not going to do.
Yeah, I would have bitten there and just gone for a black or white decision. But I do think what you said about the that the threat that Sun has is, it's that Sun-Kane relationship is almost like a silver bullet. It's something that is there. And I do think a lot of teams do play Russian roulette sometimes with us. And all it needs is just for that barrel to spin once and then they're done. Yeah. I want to go in a little bit on Dyer, but I'm not going to. But I did think his defending for the Brighton winner was appalling. And it was some of the old Dyer that we've seen. What do you feel about the Brighton winner?
I'm struggling to remember it now. I watched it earlier on.
There's
the blank, but
Romero, the ball. Great. No, the ball comes loose. Romero wins a tackle. It bubbles loose to Trossard, and he sells Dyer a dummy. Dyer goes the wrong way, and he finishes. I thought it was a little bit weak from Dyer, but he has been pretty good and he has been great for us. So I'm going to let him off this time. But that's just a little red flag from me I'm watching you, Dyer.
Yeah, it's coming back. It wasn't the best, but I certainly don't have any qualms with Dyer this season. I think he's been brilliant. And no matter how good you are as a defender, you are going to switch off on occasion. And like Brighton didn't cause us huge problems the other day, more problems than we caused them. But it was... Yeah, it wasn't great, but it's certainly not something that's going to motivate me to go into him and think, well, I really need another centre-back in the summer to get rid of him. I think it was, it's just one of those things that happens. Maybe that's me being soft. That's why I'm not a top coach yet, because I'm not hanging him out to dry and I'm too forgiving.
We're going to make you more cutthroat, Chris. I'm going to coach you to be more cutthroat.
I think I need it. I definitely need it.
Horseshit and Burgers asks a question. Are we a little short at the back height-wise? Romero is 6 foot and Ben Davies is 5'11". Basically, do you think we need bigger defenders?
Just before I get into that, is that username there, is that in reference to what you smell when you get to a footy ground? You get to the corner, like, you know, think about the old ground. You get there and you'd walk around the back of the Paxton and you'd smell the burgers frying up and the, you know, see the horseshit everywhere. I think I like that. It's very evocative name.
I hadn't thought about it. I just thought it was an interesting username, but that's exactly what it is. As you approach the ground, it is, I've never seen fresh horseshit. It's always splattered. But yeah, it does smell of really bad burgers. And have you ever eaten a burger at Tottenham from one of those stalls?
But in the new ground?
No, outside. What, have you ever eaten from a burger?
Yeah, I have, regrettably. I used to go to the Colonel behind the Paxton,
that's where Windy went as well. He used to go there regularly.
Yeah, it was always, because I'm always late to the game, so I'm always like running there, grab a Colonel and, you know, shove it in my mouth as I move around to the shelf. And I know I've like completely like bypassed the question here. It just reminded me of arriving at the old ground. But now we get posh food in the stadium now. So yeah.
I mean, I never need an excuse to start talking about food. But I'm quite curious, why are you always late, Chris?
I just can't get to the game on time. It's something about me. I'm that, you know, when everyone sits down and after the first like minute of action, I'm that person who turns up just after that. And excuse me, every week. The people in my row at the old ground used to hate me. I always struggled. It was always the same. I'd either forget it was an early kickoff, I'd just see, like, you know, I'd be on like the tube train with no other Spurs fans on it because they're all at the ground already. Just yeah, terrible at being on time for games.
Do you live far away?
Well, I think I do now. I'm in Edinburgh, but okay. When I was in London, I was lived about an hour and a bit on the tube, and it was always the same. If I knew it was a 3 o'clock kickoff, it would get to 1:30, and I'd be like, oh, I probably should get changed now, and go. And then suddenly it's like 2 o'clock. I'm gonna be late.
I mean, I'm never late for a game, but I always tend to I rush really hard to get there early. I like to be there early and have a beer or two before it starts, because as like many people who were there on Saturday would have known, you don't know what Spurs are going to serve up. So at least you're kind of guaranteed, if you get there early and you meet your friends and have a few beers, you're guaranteed it's going to be okay. You're going to have a nice time anyway.
Yeah. I've got there early a few times in the new ground, you know, to savour it all. But you know, Seven Sisters gets further away from the ground every year, I'm sure. It's now a 3-hour walk. I'm convinced of this. That's my excuse anyway.
So going back to the question, are we a little bit short in defence? Romero's 6 foot. Ben is only 5'11". Do we need a big centre back like Dan Burn in there?
Have we been particularly targeted in the air? I mean, Romero wins his headers, right?
Romero has been criticised for his set piece defending.
But that's marking. That's different from actually like aerial prowess, because you know I'm just trying to, you know, I've not noticed him getting beaten in the air too often, and same with Davis as well. I don't think they're particularly vulnerable, because like being tall isn't necessarily means you're good in the air. And it certainly doesn't mean you're good at marking. Obviously it helps if you're tall, because you can just like you're tall, you can sort of stoop over and win your headers. But I don't think it's something I've picked up on. Obviously with a back three as well, you know, with it's slightly less kind of dangerous if one of your outside centre backs is less good in the air. But I don't think any of them is like a sort of a complete, you know, is walking under a target on the head. And obviously Dyer, you know, it's like an Easter Island head in the box. It's just everything hits him and bounces off. So I think he's brilliant in the air. But yeah, I think with Romero, it's his marking at set pieces, which is the issue. But I think from like just general like long ball play, I guess what we're going to face against Burnley in a few weeks, I think he's relatively good, because he's got good spring. You know, he's got a good spring in his step. So I don't think it's a massive glaring hole. And I think when you're looking at an upgrade at centre back going for next season, I think, you know, obviously you've got to look at their defensive qualities, but the technical quality to play Conte's patterns, his system, I think are the most paramount. And if they're good in the air as well, that's just like a bonus.
So I don't know what age group you coach. Are you coaching adults or youth players?
So at the moment I'm with an under 19 girls team. But I've got a little bit of experience around different age groups and some adult football.
So would you just stick the big guy at the back or the big lady at the back to defend? Then are you that kind of person? I don't want to destroy your coaching.
Oh, I feel so exposed on a podcast behind a paywall right now. I've always sort of got players that I've been given. I've not like ever worked recruitment or anything like that. But if I was put in a situation of recruitment and it was in a results driven environment, I definitely, I wouldn't want two lovely ball playing centre backs who couldn't win the headers, who can't mark, who can't defend properly. It's not something I have. I'm a bit pragmatic like that. Fortunately, like with the team at the moment, the girls they're not great in the air. At centre back, the team before, we had two like aerial monsters at centre back who just won absolutely everything, like proper Christian Romero types. Just getting up for everything, smashing strikers, all over the shop, which I loved, and they were pretty good on the ball as well. I'm not like Sean Dyche or anything, where I think, right, it's first, it's about kicking people and winning your aerial battles. So, you want them to play out for the back, you want them to play in those progressive passes in midfield, but I don't think I don't think you can. If you have players who are just too easily dominated at centre back, then you're just going to be targeted time and time again.
Yeah, I do. I wrote down as you're talking results driven and pragmatism. I do think that is something that is affecting modern football, and it's something that has definitely affected football in Italy, especially because managers are on such a quick turnaround that there's no time to develop youth always, and it's just get the results and get it done. So I think there is that balance, and even with Conte right now, he's having to balance progress of the team versus results, and especially when we're battling for top four and it's there, the possibility of Champions League is on. It's going to be interesting to see whether or not he develops stuff or just continues to just try and get the results. I've got a final question here from Jay Butcher. We might as well stick with defenders while we've been chatting about them. He says, what do you think about Joe Roden? Conte has apparently praised his performance for Wales, so this was a couple of weeks ago, but he's still not getting minutes with us. Do you think we're going to sell him, or do you think he has a place for us even as a backup fourth choice defender?
We've not seen a huge amount of Roden. Like, he played a couple of games last season, did all right, and then just got cut by Mourinho. And I guess like if one of the three at the moment is out, then Sanchez steps in, and I think that says a lot, right? Because you know, whilst he might be talking up Roden, and Roden is clearly quite a positive influence around the dressing room. You know, I think was it a Leicester goal where Conte went straight for Roden and jumped on him? Like, that was quite a telling moment, I thought. But if he's like our fifth best centre back, I don't see how he pushes ahead, into that sort of even ahead of Sanchez in the pecking order at the moment. He's not like an absolute youngster. He's not like 19, where he can see that sort of long term potential in him, but isn't ready. There's obviously some holes that Conte feels missing, and we know what Sanchez does. You know, and the limitations that Sanchez has, and he's clearly he's happier with Sanchez as that player. So I can see Roden moving on in the summer, and I don't think it was the worst signing in the world when we got him. It made sense, but whether it was that, you know, last season with a different coach than Jose would have got something out of him, who knows? But I can't see him breaking in right now.
Yeah, I think the fact that three managers, if you want to include Mason in that, have kind of ignored him kind of tells us something, that he doesn't really have much of a future at Spurs. Well, I think we can leave it there. I think Windy and Nathan were very smart by skipping this one, skipping a defeat. But thank you so much, Chris, for coming in. I think it was a good debut, and I think you did well off the bench. Not perhaps Bergwijn versus Leicester, but a game changing, almost like Llorente coming on against Ajax move. I think it was pretty useful and got us there.
Oh, it's been great. It's been great to step in and you know, sort of steady the ship, you know, before we get Windy and Nathan back fit for next week, and I'll be back on the bench again. And it's been great. Just to show you about the result.
Yeah, where can people read more or hear more from you?
So I'm relatively active on Twitter, at Chris Summersell. You know, I tend to just moan about Spurs, I guess, which is what people want. But I'm on there, and there's a link on there to my latest piece that I write. So I write a few things, and I generally have like my pinned tweet is a link to my writing, so they can, if they'd like to read a little bit more, then by all means. And if anyone wants to talk like coaching or anything like that, just drop me a direct message. I'm pretty bad at replying instantly, so I've got a few in the can at the moment I've just remembered I need to reply to. So any listeners, apologies that I've ignored you. But yeah, you can find me there.
Nice one, Chris. So go check out Chris, and remember to check out the podcast Humans of Purpose on your podcast iPlayer. If you like it, make sure you hit the subscribe button and leave a review, or learn more about the show at humansofpurpose.com. Thank you everybody for listening. Ciao, ciao.
You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Bardi for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindmer for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter at Davey Shambles and his SoundCloud, D. Lindmer. Do check him out, he's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.